When I grow up, I'm going to be a veterinarian?
It's awesome.
And I'm going to be what you said we need more of.
So you want to be a plumbernarian?
Do you think I can?
I think that if you work really hard, you can be anything.
Promise?
You bet I do.
When you promise your kids the world, we're here to help you keep it. Ohio's 529 plan is the best tax-free savings plan for future college or career training nationwide. Start now at collegeadvantage.com.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay,
when the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC, the first one with action involved of this season. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today. Joining me is our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah, it's quite funny actually because when we did the last big Champions League show, which was obviously on the back of the draw, I didn't know how the draw had panned out, if everyone remembers rightly. And I got quite a few messages that day saying, oh, that was fun. Like, I'm glad you didn't know what was coming because we loved the anticipation of getting to some of the groups and seeing how you would react to them because we already knew. And I was like, that's cool. And then inadvertently tonight, we've turned up for this show and it's obviously recording Wednesday night. I've watched Man United v Bayern Munich, but I don't actually know any of the other scores from today's games. They didn't show up. Like, it used to be the case, I think, that they would flash up in the bottom corner of the screen. That didn't happen tonight with the United game. So I've actually got the Arsenal game playing right now, and they've just gone 1-0 up against PSV, and Saka's tucked one away. But I've got no idea how the game ends. So you are actually going to be a great service to me tonight, mate, because you are revealing some Champions League scorelines. And I've avoided the score app because once I realised I didn't know any outcomes, I was like, do you know what? I'm going to find these out on the app, on the pod as well. So, yeah, I've gone through the weird game that was Bayern v Man United, and the rest I will learn from you.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we're going to do Champions League takeaway through the group stage is going to be a bit different to what we did in the knockouts, because at the end of last year, obviously, we could sort of dole it out and there were less games going on. But across the course of it, we can't cover everything if we want this show to be as immediate as we would like it to be. So we're going to pick three big takeaways from each day of the Champions League. If you haven't guessed from Dean's remark there, I'll have two on today's games and he's going to have two on yesterday's games. And then we'll do a quick roundup of each day as well. So we'll start with Wednesday's action. And DJ, you're going to lift us off with, well, the chaos fest that was Manchester United 3, Bayern Munich 4 at the Allianz Arena in Bavaria.
Yeah, you know, I went to Germany with very little hope, I think, and came out with it, remarkably, with three goals to their name, but conceding four, could have been seven or eight, to be honest. Absolute disaster yet again. I mean, I don't even know what to do with this team anymore. It's the same old story, mate. For 20 minutes, they looked all right. I mean, they were reasonably organised and stuff. And I was keeping a close eye on Casemiro because, like, right, he's getting a bad time of things. I want to keep an eye on exactly how he's doing. His positioning was fine. You know, he was looking a bit lumbersome, if you like. Like he was not getting around the pitch very much, but he was well positioned. He was commanding and he was popping off some neat first time passes. And I was like, okay, that's not too bad. Eriksen seems a little bit all over the place. I'm not sure where Bruno Fernandes is playing, but they're playing okay generally. They just haven't really got any threat. And then it all just falls down on them. And like, Onana, for Christ's sake. I mean,
it wasn't good.
It was useless, mate. I mean, the first goal was just an embarrassment. Like, I mean, just disaster. And I mean, this is the problem with Man United is, and I've tried to, I wanted to avoid doing this. I was like, I want to give Casemiro and Onana credit today. Like, that was my aim coming into the game. I can't.
It's quite a bold thing to start with.
Yeah, I was like, I just want to watch these guys and be like, look, it's not that bad. And the reason I wanted to do it is because United always have scapegoats. And no, it's not Jadon Sancho. Normally, it's been like Ronaldo. It's been McTominay. It's been Fred. There's been Harry Maguire. There's been David De Gea. There's been Anthony. There's been Casemiro. There's been Onana recently. And I was like, this isn't it. Like, it's the overall thing that's the problem. And we're always, always picking out individuals as they're the problem. And then Onana does that. And I'm like, for fuck's sake, like, what are you doing? And then let's hit another one, like 4 minutes later.
To be fair, the second goal isn't quite as bad.
The second one, though, it's Casemiro's fault. Like, Musiala's gone round him like he's an old man. And it's like, you can't let, like, obviously, like, they're at different stages of their career, but, like, Casemiro's not, shouldn't be as immobile as he looked as Musiala just turns around him and just waltzes away with the ball, goes through. Like, Musiala, what he does is magic. Like, the guy is different class, but, like, in that moment, it wasn't really made much of on the game, on the version that I was watching. I was like, that is so easy, the way that Casemiro's gone out there and then not done anything to stop him from getting past him. And then, yeah, you know, Gnabry sticks it in. And you're like, the 2-0 down the Allianz, and there's pretty much no way back from there. There hasn't been any quotes yet from Ten Hag, but if he didn't give him a bollocking at half-time, I'd be amazed, because they're absolute shambles by the end of the half. And like, Onana, obviously, like, the big thing is his passing. Even his passing was going astray towards the end of the half. You could see his head had gone a little bit. United had three sub-keepers on the bench, right? And this is weird, obviously, and they're doing it to make up numbers. But on the back of what Arteta was saying the other day and what we were talking about the other day with changing goalkeepers and, like, David Raya and Ramsdale having this competition, I was thinking to myself, Onana looks in such a bad place right now. He's having an awful game in terms of stopping shots, and now he's not passing it out properly either. If this was anyone else on the pitch, they'd be subbed. He's playing that badly. He's having a nightmare, right? It's awful. And for his sake, you might want to take him out of the game, but obviously they didn't. And to be fair, in the second half, Onana made three or four decent stops, even though United ended up conceding a couple more. But look, I don't know what United could do, but they've now conceded 10 goals in their last three matches. Like, they're giving up goals, like, at record numbers here. Like, I can't remember the exact stats, so I'm not going to repeat it. But in terms of, like, two or more goals being conceded, like, this is a record that goes back, like, 20-odd years or something for Man United to have conceded this many goals at this stage of a season. And just piles more misery, really, on Erik ten Hag, who just isn't getting anything going his way. Look, now, Højlund got a goal back after the break, and it... Look, I love Højlund already, by the way. I think he's looking really sharp. I really enjoy watching him, and I can't wait to see the full version of him once we see the full version of Man United, because it'll be good. But, yeah, obviously United do get back in the game at 2-1. And, like, I don't even know if it was 2 minutes later that Eriksen handballs in the box and there's a pen. Everyone on Twitter
is
like...
He's a bit unfortunate.
Is it, mate? Is it? What? Why is that? I mean, it's unfortunate, yeah, but it's a penalty. Like, everyone on Twitter is like, that's not a penalty. It's a penalty. Like, in this day and age, and in the Champions League, that is a penalty. Yeah, no, you are to say unfortunate, fair enough. But that's a penalty. There were so many people on Twitter, like, saying, I can't believe that that's been given. Why? Why can't you believe that's been given? That's a penalty like that's been given in Champions League for at least the last 2 years. And so... Yeah, I don't know that Eriksen could do much about it, but he also can't really complain, because that's the way football works now, especially in this competition. So Kane buries it. Like, I don't know why Onana even bothered diving. Like, he buried
it with glee as well.
There was like, no, you know, of all the things Onana could have saved this season, that weren't one of them. So he should have just stood there. Yeah, Kane absolutely buried it, and then killed off late on, even though Casemiro somehow manages to grab a couple of consolation goals. But yes, it's a bad time. The thing is, we all knew Man United were going to lose this game. It's all about now for them the next month and how they bounce back from it. From a Bayern Munich point of view, like, they'll be disappointed that they've come out of it with three goals conceded, but they were in command of this game. Like, they outclassed Man United in every area of the pitch.
After the first 20 minutes, I thought.
Yeah, well, after the first 20 minutes, I thought we were even, to be honest. Like, it was just a bit, nothing was really happening. It was a bit boring. It was a bit cagey. And as soon as that moment when Musiala turned it on, that was something Man United didn't have. And that's what Bayern do have over them. And in the end, yeah, Bayern were definitely superior.
It was quite, like, there's quite a comedy element of the fact that on paper, going to Bayern Munich away and losing 4-3, scoring three goals, yes, it's never good to concede four, but losing by a single goal, scoring three times at the Allianz, on paper, it's not a particularly dreadful result. But I think that what was quite weird about it is that every time United hit back, it felt like they were punished immediately. And that's the kind of weird thing about this. Obviously, as we say, the Eriksen thing is unfortunate, but it is kind of the... Oh, you get yourself back in the game, it gets taken away from you. And then suddenly, you know, the Casemiro goal from the floor happens in the 89th minute. We know there's going to be 5 or 6 minutes of injury time. You're like, okay, cool. Can United pile on the pressure? Bayern go down the other end. Müller hits the post. And then Matthias Tell scores. It's a really good finish, actually, the fourth one.
Yeah.
And then obviously they score again right at the end. But it didn't ever feel, I didn't think, like Bayern had lost control of the game. And that's probably the thing that hits hardest and cuts deepest from United perspective, because you feel like in a game where you pull back to within a goal twice, you should be able to take the initiative and at least get something going straight away. And yet it was taken away from them by Bayern almost like effortlessly in both occasions.
Yeah, it's true. It's exactly that. Effortlessly might be the word there. But yeah, from a Man United's point of view, mate, it's just the same old story. And I mean, I doesn't think it even needs that deep analysis. I've just heard Paul Scholes talking about it at the end there. And he said, you know, first half, you know, we're doing fine, like we've just said there. And then it all just starts to unravel in the end of the first half. And in the second half, he said, you know, Bayern just mastered them. And that's pretty much the story of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, let's roll onwards because I want to talk about Arsenal 4, PSV.
Battered him. Absolutely battered him. And that, well, remember on Patreon the other day, I said that wouldn't happen, didn't I?
Well, this was comprehensive.
Wow, and that's I've a hell of a result.
Arsenal were exceptional. And I have PSV Eindhoven pegged as the second best team in this group.
Yeah.
So for them to win 4-0, now obviously let's you know, take the context. Last year in the Europa League, these two teams were in the same group. Arsenal won pretty comfortably against PSV at home and lost in Eindhoven. So it's not all doom and gloom, but this is a different PSV side, different manager, different personnel. And Arsenal kind of, there was a lot of chat about them being at the top table again, right? Being back in Champions League action. And the goals came in such wonderful fashion. So obviously you've seen the Bukayo Saka goal where he taps in the rebound, but he opens the entire thing up himself. Then he turns provider, he squares, and Trossard scores a lovely goal, 2-2 for him. And as PSV tried to open the game out and respond, it just kept coming from Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus scored his first goal of the season, tied the game up really before halftime. Could have added a second just after the break. And then Arteta was able to ring the changes early in the second half. It was a nice moment for Emile Smith-Rowe, who came on, set up an absolutely stunning goal for Martin Ødegaard. And I think that you look at Saka, you look at Ødegaard here. I thought that Declan Rice had a really good game. I actually thought that Kai Havertz had a really good game as well. Now, people will go, oh, no goals, no assists for Havertz once again. But actually, the way he drove forward with the ball, the way he led that press from midfield, I thought was really, really impressive tonight. And you just look at the players that stepped up here for Arsenal. There were moments, and this is a PSV side with, you know, some serious footballers, especially on the wings. Noah Lang and Johan Bakayoko, really exciting footballers who get going and get into games and can really cause defenders problems. They didn't. And I think that you look at Gabriel, who makes a really wonderful tackle on Bakayoko just before the break in the box, just nicks it away from him after Bakayoko's beaten one or two. And you're like, this is a team in complete control. And if this is how in control they are against a team who I think are the best side in their group, Arsenal might wipe this group. And to kind of get to that level, and it's kind of one of these real strange moments that it's always hard stepping back into the Champions League. It's always, some teams really struggle to make that jump up. Some teams struggle with the expectation. And we talked about Arsenal and struggling with expectation at different points of last season. But this felt so seamless. It feels like Saka, Ødegaard are built for this stage. This is Declan Rice's Champions League debut. Now, look, I suppose the fact that they're 3-0 up at halftime affects the way that the game develops, but they were just so composed, Arsenal. And we've said this season that they haven't been at their very best. We haven't seen the best of Arsenal yet, but they felt a little bit more resilient. And this is what happens when that resilience opens up really early. And it just felt like so many of this team were so ready for this stage. And that was my big takeaway from the Arsenal game. They just felt so ready, so composed, so in control. And the fact that he got off to that really good start will have helped this. And ultimately, you know, you look at some of the other games in this group, and we'll talk about that in a little while. There is no reason that Arsenal can't go, you know, 18 points for 18 in this group if PSV are their second best opponent and they have swiped them away today, like swatted them like an annoying fly, because this could have been far more than four. And there was maybe one big moment for PSV in the first half where Lang teed up a really nice chance actually for Bakayoko, but he just sort of dribbled it down David Raya's throat. And it was just like, cool, this is that's kind of it. That was all that was kind of offered up as a response. And
yeah,
this was a really, really impressive performance from Arsenal, I thought.
Oh, wow. Well, I wasn't expecting them to see them off this resoundingly, and to not concede against PSV is very impressive. I mean, that's now two goals. David Raya was in goal, wasn't he? So that's two games in a row he's played and not conceded. So that's back-to-back clean sheet. So that's very interesting in this goalkeeper competition that Arteta has now presented himself with. And I'm guessing that means that David Raya is going to be starting the North London derby at the weekend. So that's another little narrative to bounce off of that one with. But that's important for Arsenal too, going into that North London derby. This was a massive week for them, having this first Champions League game, being back in the competition, and then going into a game they really need to at least not lose at the weekend. And I imagine after the performance that you've just described, they will highly fancy their chances of now taking that tone into the Premier League. And while they've been good in the Premier League, as you say, they haven't been like outstanding and like actually set themselves apart from teams so far. And this will be an opportunity for them to now go and do that. I'm just going to say, by the way, because I was absolutely slating Onana a minute ago, as we're recording now, some quotes from him have just dropped because he requested to speak after the game to the media. And he's come out with quotes just accepting the blame for this defeat. Says, it's my responsibility. It's because of me we didn't win. I have to learn from it. I've got a lot to prove. To be honest, my start here at Man United is not good. It was me who's let the team down. Very rarely do you hear that. And I don't know if you saw it, but there was a video going around before the game of him doing an interview. I'm not sure with which TV outlet it was, but it was a foreign one. Basically saying like everything's going to be fine. This is a team problem that we've had so far. And he was talking so confidently and so calmly that he even put his arm around the interviewer. Like, he was so relaxed in himself. And then he goes and puts in a performance like that, and he has to come out with quotes like this after. So fair play to Onana for holding his hands up there. He's got criticism, and he's already bouncing back from it straight away and coming out and saying, yeah, I'm to blame. That is pretty brave, yeah. But I think, I mean, obviously they are Statement FC, so we should have probably expected it. But yeah, even the goalkeeper's doing it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, fair play to Andre Onana. I do really hope he turns that around, because I do think he's a wonderful goalkeeper. Right, the third and final takeaway is going to be from Real Sociedad 1, Inter 1.
Oh.
And I'll walk you through this game in a minute.
Yeah.
The takeaway is that Simone Inzaghi got this wrong. He over-rotated. Oh. And he over-rotated quite badly. He started Marco Arnautovic up front, mm-hmm, instead of Marcus Thuram. He started Carlos Augusto on the left wing back. He brought in Christian Aslani in defensive midfield. And he brought in Benjamin Pavard as well in the defensive line. And Inter Milan are incredibly, incredibly lucky to have got a point out of this game. They should have been dead and buried. Look at the stats for the game, for the entire thing. Real Sociedad had 14 shots, 5 on target. Inter had 6 shots, 1 on target. Real Sociedad did what Inter did to Milan in the derby. Apart from, they couldn't finish their chances. And Bryce Mendes actually put Real Sociedad ahead after 4 minutes. He robbed Bastoni on the edge of his own box, knocked him over, and just slotted past Jan Sommer. And from there, it was one-way traffic. Absolutely one-way traffic. How Real Sociedad didn't score more than this one goal, I will never know. Like, I will never know. It was an absolutely incredible display. I thought Oyarzabal was brilliant. I thought Barnacheo, who was playing in a slightly different sort of centre-forward role, was excellent. Taki Kubo, brilliant. Bryce Mendes bombing on from midfield. Thought that Kieran Tierney had a really good game, and Robin Lenormand as well. It was basically almost everything you could want at Anoeta for Real Sociedad's return to the big time. And late on, 87th minute, Lautaro Martinez nicks an equaliser. Now, basically, what happened was Inzaghi rang the changes. He brought on Marcus Thuram. He brought on Acerbi in the back line. He brought on Fratesi in midfield. He brought on Di Marco and moved it slightly to a kind of 4 at the back rather than a 5. And he brought on Alexis Sanchez. And four of those players turned this around. Marcus Thuram nearly scored an equaliser, was ruled out for offside. And then a couple of minutes later, they did get the equaliser. But Inter finished the game really strongly. And I think they will be looking at this and going, one, wow, we've got away with one there. And two, if we'd actually started playing 10 minutes earlier, we could have won the game. So it's a bit of a strange one.
Mm.
But my big takeaway is that Inzaghi doesn't get much wrong, but he got this wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would have had Inter down to win that one. So that's a surprise. I'm just looking at the game now. Barella sent off and then rescinded. Barella, yeah.
It's one of those where he gets in a tackle and he basically is trying to free his leg from between the tackle. But in the meantime, he sort of stomps on his opposition number's crown jewels, shall we say.
Mm.
So it's a really painful one, but I don't think he's, he does it quite aggressively to try and get out of there, but I don't think he's trying to stamp on him on purpose. So yeah, it was originally a red, downgraded by VAR. It is one of those that could have gone either way, I think.
Yeah, I mean, bringing those three subs on, I mean, no wonder they changed the game. I mean, they're three of their best players, like, literally. But that is ringing too many changes and trying to be too... Did he underestimate Real Sociedad?
Like, I think maybe a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. If he thinks he can get away with something like that, like, very surprised that they haven't gone and won there. But at least they haven't lost. At least they haven't lost. They've got away with that, it sounds like.
Yeah, a bit of a funny one. But it's, yeah, really impressed with Real Sociedad. They haven't had the best start to life back in La Liga. One win, three draws, one loss, which came to Real Madrid, obviously, at the weekend. But... yeah, they haven't quite hit the heights yet, but from what we saw tonight, it won't be long before they are cooking again. Right, I'm going to quickly run you through a little breakdown of everything else that happened on Wednesday. Real Madrid 1, Union Berlin 0. Union Berlin seconds away from the fairy tale start in the Champions League with a point in the Bernabeu, but then there's a man on fire. There's a man on fire, and Jude Bellingham is incredibly difficult to stop right now.
Wow.
Popped up again to be the difference. 6 goals in 6 games since joining Real Madrid in the 95th minute of this one. And you know what? When your luck's in, your luck is in. It bounces off two Union players. They completely switch off from the corner. Toni Kroos plays it out to Fede Valverde, who has a shot. They don't close down the shot. It bounces like off three players and falls to Jude 2 yards out with an open net, and he slots it home gleefully. But the Bernabeu has a new hero, and his name is Jude Bellingham. Six. He's one off. He's one off the amount of goals that Benzema scored in his first season at Real Madrid.
Mate, I mean, that is... He's doing all right, the lad, isn't he? And I mean, what is really telling here is that the other day we were talking about how, obviously, Real Madrid... played that first game in the Bernabeu. I'm just trying to remember who it was against. Getafe, that was it. And obviously he scored then deep into injury time. And then, so to now I've done that in the Champions League as well. He's already in that mentality that has been going back like 100 years inside that stadium. He's already got that knack to him. That is outstanding, like absolutely ridiculous.
Tough on Union, to be honest. They defended really well for 90 minutes and they just lost their concentration in the dying seconds. They were definitely the inferior side, but they would have been relatively good value for a point, I think, given the way they defended.
Still a good result, anyway, mate. To go to Real Madrid and only lose 1-0 in the last minute, I know it's like sapping, but it's still something you can be proud of.
Points make prizes, mate. Points make prizes. Right to the quarry, or Pedreira, as it's known in Braga, where the score was Braga 1, Napoli 2. I think it was probably the most entertaining game of the night, to be perfectly honest with you. Serie A champions Napoli in town. Napoli could have scored 4-5 goals in the first half. Victor Osimhen hit the woodwork twice. He hit the post with a header, and then he hit the crossbar with a shot. But finally, they broke the deadlock just on the stroke of halftime. Giovanni Di Lorenzo firing a volley home. Braga made it a really good contest, though. They kept trying to strike on the break, threw up plenty of chances for themselves. And at 1-0, it was really hotly contested the whole way through. And it looked like they'd earned themselves a point because Bruma headed in an equaliser with just minutes to go. But that only lasted 2 minutes. Next Napoli attack, punishing own goal for Siku Niakate. Really harsh. He fired into his own net when he was trying to clear a Zielinski cross. It was tough on Braga, but Napoli definitely the better side in this one. And those 3 points felt deserved.
Oh yeah, that sounds like they got away that late. But Braga must be gutted when you get an equaliser that late. You think you've snatched something. It's all about that strength of mind and resilience to hold out. But when it's Napoli coming at you and at you and at you, it's always going to be hard. I mean, who was left on the pitch at the end? As Osimhen, oh, he was still on the pitch. I'm just looking through this now. But Osimhen was still on the pitch, I see, by the time they actually did get that breakthrough goal, is it?
He was indeed. Right, Sevilla 1, Lens 1. Sevilla started strongly, I thought, but it was a pretty dull game. They were gifted a goal by Brice Samba. He sort of let Lucas Campos get in front of him at a corner and just like loop a header over his head, which was pretty dumb. But you kind of expect better from Samba. He's a French international. He's been very good for a long period of time. Just expect him to be able to improve on that kind of thing. But Lon's got a point. They got a really good equaliser from Angelo Fulghini, who hit a screamer of a free kick into the top corner. First Champions League goal for them for almost two decades. And look, they're currently bottom of Ligue 1. Like, this was a game between two sides who've really struggled at the start of this season. It wasn't that exciting. There was a couple of moments to El Yawahi, who could have won it. There were a couple of moments to Villa late on as well. But yeah, I mean, not the most exciting game. And as we said in the Arsenal segment, the Gunners will be, and I think PSV as well, will be looking at this and thinking, yeah, we can.
Yeah,
that's
big for Arsenal. That game is in a draw, yeah.
Absolutely. Benfica 0, RB Salzburg 2.
Oh, wow.
In Lisbon.
Wow.
Another year, another glut of incredibly talented youngsters shining on the big stage at Salzburg, right? 20-year-old and a 19-year-old scored the goals to beat Benfica in Lisbon. Benfica were like comical. It was like a tragedy. A comedy of errors, if you will. They gave away two penalties and had a man sent off in the first 20 minutes. They were given a sort of reprieve when Karim Konaté missed the first penalty. It was a really bad penalty. And then they were like, okay, that wasn't good enough. You have another go. Trubin came out. Trubin gave away the first penalty. Came for the second. The ball gets lifted over him when he comes out with nowhere near getting it. And it bounces off the crossbar. Antonio Silva tries to head it away, misses it, and then just palms it off the line. And the ref's like, mate, what are you doing?
He's like, melon of the week.
It's like, obviously you're going to have to send you off. I don't think he's intending to do it. It's like kind of like a, you know, a natural reaction. But it's like the ref was like, I know you didn't mean to do that, but you've just denied them a goal. You've got to be sent off. And Roko Simic put it away. Do you know his dad was Dario Simic, 100 caps for Croatia.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
So he scored from the spot, really good goal. And weirdly, Benfica got better once they had 10 men. Angel Di Maria nearly scored directly from a corner. There were a couple of big chances, but eventually they threw a bit too much caution to the wind and Salzburg went on this kind of five-man break. Simic knocked the ball round the keeper and Oscar Gluck, 19-year-old who shone in the under European championships the other year, tapped home for a debut goal in the Champions League for him. So yeah, another crop of Salzburg youngsters tearing it up on the big stage. Really, really cool. And finally, Galatasaray 2, Copenhagen 2. Bit of a nuts game this as well. It was the other early kickoff alongside Real Madrid, Union Berlin. And Galatasaray were 2-0 down in Istanbul to Copenhagen after some pretty comical defending, to be honest. But then Copenhagen had a man sent off. And Galatasaray just somehow turned on the style. Two absolutely unbelievable volleys in 2 minutes, leveling the contest. It was 86th and 88th minute, I think the two goals in. But then the second one, made in the Premier League, Wilfried Zaha crosses the ball, and Tete, who was on loan at Leicester last year, volleys home. So ended 2-2. Bit of a crazy contest, but the Gala fans would have gone home relatively happy, having been very, very upset at halftime.
Interesting one. Well done, Wilf. He's always wanted to play at this level and try and make his mark. So I'm glad he's done that in match day one at his new club.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, after the break, we're going to be looking at Tuesday's action. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC and Champions League Takeaway. We're going to take a look at Tuesday's Champions League action. And I'm going to hand over to Dean for the first and the third of these takeaways. But where are we starting off, DJ?
We'll go to Milan first. AC Milan 0, Newcastle 0 somehow. Takeaway really is that Rafael's had an off day. And these don't come around as often as they used to. That's for sure. But you do still see him, I reckon, about 20% of the time. Maybe one in five, you get Eliao off day. And when you get Eliao off day, he's really off colour. And he tries things and they don't work. And he becomes frustrating. Even his teammates probably at the end are like, "Boy, just get off, just get off." And it was one of those for him. I'm sure everybody's seen that the attempted back heel in the box after a run. And it kind of summed up how his day was going. Look, let's face it, like at the weekend, Leao was kind of let down by his teammates when AC Milan were battered by Inter Milan. This was a game when his teammates actually really bounced back from that performance. Everyone up to their levels and Leao's dropped off and he just couldn't find the finishes that he normally would have. And over trying, whatever, maybe. But look, Newcastle were up against it here. In terms of possession, you could look at it and it looks like it was reasonably even because Milan only had 52% according to that. But you know, they had like 20 shots at Newcastle's goal. Newcastle, I think, had 3 shots throughout the 90 minutes and just couldn't really offer much. Bizarrely, Newcastle could have actually nicked it right at the end. Because Longstaff stuck one over the bar. And he probably had a pass on as well, and he could have just stuck it one more pass wide. There might have been a better option for Newcastle to go and nick it here, and their fans would have gone absolutely mad. But yeah, Newcastle will be pleased, I think, to get out of here with a point. It's a good result for them. There's no doubt about it. AC Milan will definitely see this as points dropped. And I'm afraid it's one of those days where I don't like to see. I really don't like to see. And I thought I wasn't going to see it on this sort of stage anymore. But Rafael Leão just wasn't himself.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. He had the there were moments, but not kind of continued brilliance, I thought. And you're right. I thought that the rest of the Milan side really stepped up. I think Newcastle, and I watched Eddie Howe's post-match interview yesterday, and he was like, no, I thought it was a pretty even game. Just they had all the chances and we didn't. I was like, that's not an even game, Eddie. That's very different to an even game, I would say. 25 shots for Milan, 9 on target, and unable to breach the Newcastle guard. I thought that Nick Pope did well without being, you know, particularly brilliant and didn't need to. But I did think it was a little bit harsh that the commentary team kept being like, they keep heading it all straight at Nick Pope. I was like, they're heading it down into the ground, and you know, it's bouncing up into a good place for him. That's not necessarily their fault. That's just a little bit of luck. It felt like a really harsh criticism, but Milan will probably be looking at it and going, that's a major missed opportunity in such a difficult group at home. You've got to have to win your home game. So
absolutely,
yeah, tough one, yeah, for Milan. Really, I want to take us over to Barcelona, where my hot take off this is, Joao Felix is back in Ballon d'Or form.
Go on then.
Welcome back to the Joao show, because wow, I have missed this. I have missed watching him in this kind of joyful exuberance, and watching him in these first two games, even against Betis at the weekend, filled my heart with joy. He is just such a wonderful footballer when he's enjoying himself. And look, whether that goes across the course of his career, and it's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows, right? And you have to learn how to deal with those things. And maybe that's a criticism that he can have. But when he's on this kind of form, and you can see the kind of childish glee that he has about playing in this Barcelona shirt, he's now got 3 goals and 1 assist in 2 starts for Barcelona. Wow. It's a pretty remarkable start to life. They've won both games he started 5-0. Now, this was comfortable against Antwerp. They started hot and it didn't get much easier. But more than anything, his goal is good. It's a really good sort of tuck inside, hit the ball early. And we saw a lot of that at Benfica, where he's an early striker of the ball and it would beat goalkeepers all ends up because he hits it hard and low and true. And we've seen a little bit of that so far here at Barcelona. But more than that, his assist for Lewandowski's goal is really beautiful. And it's like one of those you're looking at and going, okay, wow. And suddenly Lewandowski looks reborn. You know, the first couple of games of this season, yes, they were tough physical encounters, fine. But he said last season that whilst he appreciates why Barcelona were playing with that 4 sort of in the middle rather than 4-3-3, it meant that he didn't have as many players to work off, and it meant he thought the team were less creative. Well, suddenly Felix has come in on that left-hand side and his eyes must be lighting up every time they get the ball into the final third. Gavi was brilliant behind him as well, allows Felix to kind of not necessarily need to do quite as much defensive work. But when he's playing like this, he is such fun. And I think this Barcelona side are going to be a heap of fun, you know, in the Champions League this season. I think there's a bit of a, okay, we didn't get through the groups last season, can we come back and make a real statement? And I wonder if this is going to be one of the things they really, you know, heavily focus on, maybe even more so than the league, in order to just be like, oh, by the way, we're back, especially because of the financial incentives that come with going deep in the Champions League, right? Which the club need. There is also all sorts of questions about if Joao Felix has an absolutely unbelievable season, can Barcelona actually afford to buy him? So is it better for them if he doesn't? But just watching him in that Blaugrana shirt has been so much fun already in the 2 games we've seen him play. And my takeaway was just that in this kind of form, and if he stays in this kind of form, and he stays in playing this kind of way Joao Felix will be back in the Ballon d'Or conversation next year. Not maybe to win it, but in the top 10 conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's bold. He's played against Betis and Royal Antwerp. So yeah.
Real Betis is the second best side in the
second best team in what, Seville?
You can quieten down over there. That's quite enough from you.
But yeah, that is a hot take, mate. But look, it's good to see this version of Joao Felix back, obviously. He wasn't that bad last season at Chelsea, was he? Like, he was just in a team that was an absolute disaster. And now he's in a team that are good. So hopefully he can just be himself and add in with the goals that should have probably come his way at Chelsea last season. Because half the time I watched him, he was actually the best player on the pitch still. So that's probably not far off what you're saying. And he will be back in that conversation in no time.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to City for our final hot take of the evening, or takeaway.
Yeah, just trying to remember who they were playing. But yeah, Man City 3, Red Star Belgrade 1.
Can you say that in Serbian for me, please?
I absolutely can't. I mean, I still don't know why we have to see this version of it. What does it say?
Svena Zvezda.
Don't know what you said.
I said Red Star in Serbian.
But yeah, I wish I could say that. I can't. I'll try. Man City 3, Zvezda 1. And that's as good as we get today.
I've heard worse attempts at it, I'll be honest.
The big takeaway from this one is Julian Alvarez is the best supporting actor in world football. You won't find anyone that is as selfless as this lad when he's perfectly capable, I think, of probably just being the main man if he wanted to be at this point. 23 years old, went to the World Cup with Argentina, picked up a winner's medal there, scored 4 goals along the way. But his job really was to make sure that it was Leo Messi's time. That was his main job. It's like, make sure you do well. You'll play all the games, but just make sure that Messi ends up getting that Ballon d'Or that he wants and that we win the tournament. And he's like, okay, no worries. Now he's doing the same job at Man City for Erling Haaland. Like, he's there. And then if the main man can't quite deliver when he needs to, Alvarez will just take it on himself. It'll just be, just leave this to me. Some of the stuff he did in this game was absolutely ridiculous.
The first goal is absolutely sublime. It's one of the best pieces of skill I've seen in a long time.
Oh, he's a joy to watch, mate. He's an absolute joy to watch. He's so good, in fact, that I've transferred him into my FPL team for this week, because when players are in this kind of form, and especially if you've currently got Ollie Watkins up front in your FPL team, you've got to pay notice to it. And
I've got to say, I'm actually ahead of the curve for once. I put him in the day that De Bruyne got injured.
Did you? Yeah, I mean, that's good. I mean, there was always that uncertainty about where Alvarez was actually going to fit into this Man City team, and he's taken advantage really of that De Bruyne injury for sure. And certainly Pep hasn't had to worry about that. I mean, that's how good Alvarez is and how strong Man City are. Kevin De Bruyne is missing, and we've all forgotten about it. Like, it doesn't matter. They don't need him. He can come back later in the season and do his thing for the last 2 or 3 months. That'll be just fine, sir.
I've got to say, there can't be many teams on the planet where he wouldn't start.
Oh,
like, 2 or 3 as the main number 9. They can't be. They I can't even be think many of that. At all. Well, he probably wouldn't for Bayern Munich because they have Harry Kane.
Yeah, so there's Kane and Lewandowski where he's not going to take their shirts.
I don't know, man. I think that if he was at Barcelona alongside Lewandowski, he might have had the number 9 shirt already.
Yeah, maybe. He could definitely play in that team, that's for sure. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that he could get in anywhere. But Man City, I mean, I think you said at the time that this was going to be a great signing, and there was big things to be expected here, and he's absolutely flourishing this season. And even when De Bruyne comes back, Pep's going to have a big decision to work out, like, what he does, who is going to be the guy that misses out, because I don't think it's going to be Alvarez anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of fun in this game. My favorite thing that happened in this game was that there was a banner in the Etihad that just said, "Can we talk about Rodri?" And he put on another masterclass in the middle of the park, and then he got on the score sheet. Really, really lovely goal. But, you know, something has to be said. This man, you know, we talk about the Ballon d'Or this year. We talk about the fact that, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, it's Messi or Haaland. There's got to be a point where you start being like, has Rodri been the best player in the world?
Just goes unnoticed, and, doesn't it? So much of it. That's the thing. Like, for your casual viewer, for someone who doesn't like watch the game closely, and you just got the game on.
The game is the Ballon d'Or is not decided by people who don't watch the game closely. No, this is what always makes me laugh. Like, people are like, oh well, it's an underrated position, and you know the whole thing about defenders never winning it. I get that, but equally, like, these are, you know, pretty informed top drawer journalists making these votes. Like, you'd think that some of them would go, yeah, maybe the best player in the world hasn't been the striker who scored this many goals.
I don't
think
so, though, mate, because journalists typically don't analyse games like you think they would. There are people now out there who definitely do, because that is something that's come through in the last, mainly in the last 5 years, 5 to 10 at a stretch. But I'd say last 5 years, like, tactical football writing has become a thing. And before that, it was very, very niche. And any time I went to a press conference and someone started asking tactical questions, everyone in the room would be like, what's he doing? What's he talking about? Formations? Get out of the way, mate. We want to find out if there's been any bust-ups in the dressing room. And it's funny, actually, because managers didn't used to like being asked stuff that would spark a headline for a tabloid paper or whatever. So they'd be like, oh, can't we talk about the football? Now, if you go into a press conference and criticise a manager about his formation and start talking about the way his team's playing, they don't like that either. There's nothing you can ask in a press conference that a manager's actually going to like.
No, I can imagine. I can imagine it's not the best environment for managers, unless you're Ange Postecoglou, who seems to be the best at them in the world. Right, let's work through the other games that happened last night. PSG 2, Dortmund 0 at the Park. No goals in the first half of PSG, despite the fact they were really, really dominant. Vitinha hit the post. But just after half-time, PSG got a penalty. It was a bit harsh. It's another one like tonight's one, right? It is a penalty. But it bounces up, and there's not much that Süle can do about it. Mats Hummels tweeted afterwards, he was like, PSG were the better side and deserved to win tonight, but how do you win against referees like that? And I was like, okay, mate, seems a bit harsh. But yeah, basically, the second goal is beautiful. It's Vitinha and Hakimi with this link-up play that allows them both to sort of waltz into the box, and then Hakimi beats another man and dribbles around the keeper and scores. Really, really good goal. Dortmund just couldn't get into this whatsoever. Edin Terzic really starting to fall under a little bit of pressure now. He got away with one a bit at the weekend. They beat Freiburg 4-2. But they haven't been brilliant this season yet, I think. And this was a pretty comfortable victory for PSG. You'd kind of expect them to win at home. But the way that they kind of kept Dortmund at arm's length, I thought was pretty impressive. But pretty depressing, I imagine, if you're a black and yellow persuasion.
I've seen a few highlights of this one, and it's surprising. I have to say, mate, I always assumed going into last night that on Tuesday night that I would be watching PSG Dortmund, and I actually started the night watching Feyenoord v Celtic, and after 20 minutes of that game I had to abandon my decision, and I ended up turning on to the Man City game instead, mainly because there hadn't been any goals and I was surprised and I went for that. So I can't believe I still haven't watched like the full version of PSG Dortmund, because it seemed like the most obvious game of the week to really watch. But yeah, started off in Feyenoord Celtic.
You didn't particularly make a poor decision. It wasn't a great game. Ousmane Dembele and then Kolo Muani and Mbappe started together, which is obviously the kind of all French front three that people have been excited about. Dembele did some nice things, but he also kept making the wrong decision. It was all a bit weird. I felt it was a bit of a strange game from him, because there were some nice moments and yet it still felt like he had so much more to give. It wasn't the best of performances from PSG, but they were comfortable enough, I think, by the end of it. I want to talk about the best moment that I've seen in ages in a football match, which happened in Lazio 1, Atletico Madrid 1. And the most dramatic moment of the Champions League so far this season. Lazio's goalkeeper, Ivan Provedel, scored a 94th minute equalising header to save a point in their game at home to Atleti. And it was an unbelievable header. It's one of those where, you know, sometimes the keeper scores, although I think he's only the second keeper ever to score from open play in the Champions League. But it's not, you know, sometimes the ball sort of hits the keeper or it drops to them and they just sort of lash at it. This is a perfectly timed run. And I think it's a shot from Luis Alberto that towards the top corner. And he just sort of perfectly times his run, leaps and like smashes this header past Jan Oblak. And the celebration's like so cool. He's like, nah, this is what I do. This is what I do. So I looked into it. And turns out he used to be a striker in his youth career. And he looked back at his career through there. He only changed to being a goalkeeper very late on in his career, which is pretty wild. And it is the kind of header that you go, that man's had some experience because it was. So I found out today he scored 27 goals as a striker in 2008-2009 in the youth system for a team called Pordenone Calcio, who play now in the fourth tier of Italian football in Serie D, but who were actually relegated from the third tier last year, despite the fact they actually came second in the league because they were just financially unviable. So it's not like a complete and out of nowhere, you know, that there wasn't a team that he played for that were rubbish. There were a team in the system. And yeah, he scored 27 goals in 2008-9. Wow. So that's why. He only changed his position to goalkeeper after that. Wild.
Amazing. That is a really cool little twist to the tale. I heard yesterday actually Bernd Leno talking about how he used to be a midfielder.
I hope he doesn't decide to go and start wandering around in midfield in the way that...
Well, he might replace Paulinho, they were saying, in January, so we have to wait and see if that happens.
Maybe. But yeah, this moment from Provida, if you haven't seen it, go and check it out. It's the most incredible header. The stadium goes wild. And it's a bit of, you know, Simeone got welcomed back to Lazio. There was a big banner saying Rome will always be your home. He spent 4 years at Lazio as a key part, a couple of trophies there as well. And Atleti started really, really well, but about 70 minutes, they just decided to go full murder ball and basically refused to play football. And they were punished. And, you know, sometimes I'm grateful for those things happening because as much as I like Atleti, when they decide that they just want to shell, it's quite frustrating when they have this amount of talent on the pitch and they were punished. And if they just kept going, they probably would have scored a second because Lazio really weren't very good up to about the last 5 minutes of this game.
Nice. Yeah, well, that's a lesson for them. Whenever your keeper comes up and has to rescue you, it's never a great sign, is it? But at least they had someone that could do it.
Yeah, Superman. Great moment for Provadel. Right, final two, Celtic nil. You watched the first 20 minutes. It was about as good as it got, really, for Celtic. This was a replay of a previous European Cup final. But in Rotterdam, so it was two... You know what? I thought Celtic were all right. It was two pretty well-matched teams.
They were all right, yeah.
And then on the cusp of half-time, Calvin Stengs takes a free kick from 30 yards out. Joe Hart should do a whole lot better with this. And then Celtic go down to 10 men, give away a penalty. Gustav Lagerbielka was sent off for a second yellow. Really stupid. Brendan Rodgers spoke about it. He was like, you've just got to shepherd the ball back. I don't know what he's trying to do. Joe Hart made up for his earlier error by saving the penalty, which was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then 5 minutes later, Odin Thiago Holm was sent off for a dangerous tackle, which took Celtic down to 9 men. One of the best pieces of commentary or analysis commentary that I've ever heard from James Horncastle, who was watching this game, who basically went, that tackle was more Odin than Thiago, which I did very much enjoy. And after that, it was damage control for Celtic. They I think final scored two, which were both ruled out, and then finally got their second goal. But 9 men in Champions League, as Brendan Rodgers said, it's hard enough with 11. So a tough one for Celtic, but I think there were some positives in the first sort of 45 minutes of this game before it all sort of fell apart. Shakhtar 1, Porto 3 in Hamburg, because obviously Shakhtar Donetsk can't play at home. Yep. But they play their league games in Poland and they're playing their Champions League games in Hamburg. There's a million Ukrainians displaced in Germany and the home crowd really got behind them in this one. Really good start to this game. 3 goals in the first 15 minutes. There was some pretty poor defending, but Wenson Galeno, who's finally started getting going for Porto, scored the opener. But Kevin Kelsey, who's a 19-year-old Venezuelan, headed Shakhtar level, a really brilliant cross from Konoplia. And the crowd went absolutely ballistic. And you were like, okay, cool, let's see what they can do. And then literally Porto went back down the other end and Shakhtar played the ball across their own box, defender missed it, Galeno nicked in and scored a second. It was like, you just killed all the momentum. They went, but Porto were really, really good. Winger term, you know, Galeno then set up Mehdi Taremi. He was top scorer in last year's group stage. I forgot about that. But he's off the mark for the year. And second half was pretty kind of an imaginative. Nothing really went on in the second half that was worth noting. But yeah, I thought Porto looked really good here. They've had a good start to the season. They're joint top of the Primeira with Boavista, which is cool. the two sides from different sides of Porto. They were very in control here. The midfield looks much more settled. And generally, I just thought they were impressive. And then the final game was Young Boys 1, Leipzig 3. Leipzig just a bit too good for them. They scored the first goal of the competition in the third minute. Pegged back in the first half with a really brilliant goal for Young Boys, actually, Ilya. Scores an absolute stunner. But then two goals. I don't know how Xavi Simons doesn't win a penalty. He won man of the match in the end. But there's a clear foul. VAR just decides not to give it. Really strange. Like one of those really odd decisions that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But it was fine. Xavier Schlager scored a really good goal from outside the box. And in the final dying seconds, Benjamin Šeško went through and scored, made him Leipzig's youngest ever Champions League scorer. If you can name me the player he took that record off, I will give you 3 pints.
Well, I'm just not going to get
give
it.
You a I'll give you a clue. He once played for Leeds.
James Milner.
I think he was Leeds' record signing for a while, actually.
Leeds' record Harry John Kiel.
John Kevin Augustin.
Oh, blimey. Yeah, that was it. Didn't they? They ended up going to court over him, didn't they?
Yeah, ended up going to court. Didn't really play any games. Really strange move. But yeah, he was the Leipzig young scorer until Šeško scored yesterday. So thankfully, his name is sort of off the books now. We don't have to deal with that one anymore. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day, mate.
Yeah, I think it is, mate. It's late. And it's been fun. Thanks for revealing some of those scorelines to me that I didn't know. I have now seen 3 of the 4 Arsenal goals that went in tonight, and they were very good. I really liked the Trossard breakaway one. That was a lot of fun. And Gabby Jesus, I'll tell you what, if I had not already made my FPL change, I'd be thinking, oh, is it time to get Gabby Jesus in my team?
It's nice to have him back, isn't it? First goal of the
looks like
not
he's
the
back,
mark.
For sure. It was a lovely strike, that one.
Absolutely right. Well, all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to our Chancellor Guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins, Knave of Hearts. Thank you so much for tuning in to Ranks FC and for listening to this Champions League takeaway. We hope that you're going to enjoy it as much as people seemed to last year. Please do let us know with ratings, reviews, the entire shebang. If you haven't, go back and listen to the podcast we recorded earlier this week with Harry Brooks about different trends that we've noticed so far this season in football. It's a really good episode. It's always good to have head coach Harry back in the Ranks FC fold. And we'll be back next week with another 2-episode week. We'll have the standard show on Wednesday, and then there's a Friday episode as well that I've recorded today. I'm really excited about talking about South American footballers who have moved to Europe with Nathan Joyce, who is a South American football expert. It was a really, really brilliant chat, and I'm looking forward to you all hearing it. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Champions League Takeaway on Ranks FC, and we'll see you very shortly, gang. Take it easy. Peace.
When I grow up, I'm going to be a veterinarian.
It's awesome.
And I'm going to be what you said we need more of.
So you want to be a plumbernarian?
Do you think I can?
I think that if you work really hard, you can be anything.
Promise?
You bet I do.
When you promise your kids the world, we're here to help you keep it. Ohio's 529 plan is the best tax-free savings plan for future college or career training nationwide. Start now at collegeadvantage.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.